The politics that surround illegal immigration are thorny, but so are the logistics. The Homeland Security Department's Inspector General has chastised the department for sending detainees home on nearly empty flights and failing to record critical information about those detainees, like whether or not they belong to gangs. IG John Roth says the department could have saved more than $40 million through better planning. And he joins us now. Great to have you with us, John.
Pleasure to be here.
So first of all, just in a nutshell, please recap your findings, first in terms of the money and then the operational problems you found.
Sure. The Immigration and Customs Enforcement is responsible for repatriation of detainees who have a final removal order back to their home country. And what they do is they contract with a number of groups to have about 8 aircraft to fly detainees back. And what we found is that they fly about 266,000 detainees per year for the last 3.5 years and spend about $272 million a year on doing that. The flights themselves cost about $8,500 per flight hour. And what we found was that in analyzing the missions that they did, ICE didn't really keep the kind of data that we had hoped that they'd keep to make sure that what they were doing is as efficient as possible. And when we look back, for example, we found missing data that really didn't assist either ICE or us in determining whether or not the flights were as efficient as possible.
So how filled are the flights? I mean, I know I assume because this is something that is so time sensitive, it's really hard to generalize. But give me a sense of what's actually going on, where people leave from and how many people are in the plane and where they go to.
Sure. It's a massive operation. There are 4 hubs that they operate out of and with 24 field offices. So when you calculate all the different routes, there's about 600 different routes that can be taken for these detainees. What we found in analyzing the loads of the aircraft is that about 37% of them operated under 80% capacity. What we found was that there was a lot of no-shows, what they call no-shows. Obviously, these folks are detained, so they did not make the flight, although they were scheduled to, for a number of different reasons. Unfortunately, ICE didn't really capture those reasons, so it's impossible to tell whether those 37% of the flights that had under 80% capacity were avoidable.
So they weren't supposed to be so underfilled.
Correct. That's exactly right. And again, it's a wildly complicated operation, mm-hmm. as you can imagine. But what we found is that ICE simply didn't capture the data to do the kind of analysis that they need to do to make their operations more efficient.
But by nature of the fact that they're detainees, they're already in custody somewhere in the United States. Is that right? I mean, they're not people who have gone missing in the great beyond, you know, among the shadows.
Correct. There are a number of reasons why they wouldn't make their flights. For example, they may be claiming that there is a political reasons, for example, that they couldn't go, or there could be medical reasons they wouldn't go, or other reasons. Unfortunately, we don't know what those reasons are because ICE hasn't captured that data.
And do you know what's behind? I understand, and we should say that the Homeland Security Department strongly disagreed with the, and to paraphrase, with the fact that half-empty flights are a problem because they're saying, you know, we need to get people home to their home countries as soon as possible. But what is the explanation for the lack of data?
Well, there isn't, and that's the difficulty. I mean, there's a couple things. First, you know, we are sympathetic to this idea that if you are paying for bed space, for example, we're paying about $120 per day for detainee bed space, that you probably do want to remove people as quickly as possible. Unfortunately, if you don't keep the data, you don't actually know whether the 37% of the flights that were 80% under capacity is a good thing or a bad thing. I would also note that 23% of the flights were actually moving people between different field offices or different detention centers. So the cost there would be the same regardless of whether the flights were full or empty. But we made 4 recommendations, and one of the fundamental recommendations we made is that they had to have a data management plan. In other words, they had to capture the data in a way that made sense. so they could do the kind of analysis that we were trying to do here. They agreed with that recommendation, and in fact, that's what they're going to be doing in the future. Likewise, there was a training issue. We talked to the people who actually ran the program. As I said, it's an enormously complex program, and one of the things that they said was they basically got about a week of on-the-job training, which we don't think is sufficient in the kinds of complex environment that they're talking about here.
And who is involved when you say the people who got the training? I mean, what are their roles?
Well, I mean, these are the schedulers, right? These are the folks who have to determine the most efficient way to remove detainees using, you know, these 600 different routes and the massive numbers of detainees that we're talking about. So what had happened was that this was a contract at one point, but then it transitioned in May 2014 from a contract to using actual federal employees to do this. Unfortunately, they weren't sufficiently trained to be able to do it in a proper way.
You've already mentioned one sort of factor to help benchmark this, that the average bed at one of these facilities for a detainee costs $120 a night. So, that adds up. But is there any other way to sort of measure the Homeland Security Department's actions against anything else? I mean, is there any other procedure that is similar where you're in the position of having to move people on a timely basis and long distances?
Right. I mean, that's one of the things that we're asking them to do. Basically, one of our recommendations is to, put performance measures and reporting standards in place, and they don't have any of those things. So what we're asking them to do is conduct exactly that kind of analysis. Are there similar government programs that you could look at to benchmark it? If not, what are reasonable performance measures to be able to understand whether or not you're working at maximum efficiency?
We're speaking with John Roth. He's the Inspector General at Homeland Security. I want to touch for a moment on, I guess, it was something that I read in your report that was particularly disturbing to me, which was among the data that's not being recorded are basic things about the detainees, such as whether or not they are affiliated with gangs and or their criminality. I guess that was a data field that was often left empty. Has there been any sort of studies of what happens because we don't know these things? Because obviously the worry is that people go back to their home countries and they fall in with the same community that they were in before.
Right, and that's certainly an issue that we raised with that, as well as just simply the identity of the people. Not only, for example, gang affiliation or criminal history in many times wasn't recorded, but their alien number and their fingerprint identification wasn't recorded either. So we don't actually have a good sense of who it was who are on these flights, which obviously is problematic.
And it's one thing for the schedulers to need more than a week's training. That's certainly understandable. But this raises larger questions about the root causes of some of the lack of data and the information. And I'm just wondering if you could put this in perspective. This is just one report, but you've been looking at immigration and customs enforcement for a while. What are the root causes or the systemic causes that you see of lack of being able to connect the dots like this?
Sure. I mean, I think one of the things that we find as a highly, very similar thing is that program managers simply don't put together the kinds of metrics that they need to do at the beginning of the program. How is it that we measure success? What does success look like? How does the taxpayer know that it's getting sort of the best bang for its buck? You know, when we did, for example, our drone report for CBP, there were no performance measures. We knew how much they were spending. We knew how much, you know, each flight hour cost, but we had no idea whether this was a good thing or a bad thing simply because they didn't put performance measures in place, which, you know, we think is a fundamental thing that government program managers need to do, just like private industry does.
And to push a little bit, is it really the program managers or is it at a higher level, the leaders?
Well, of course, it needs to be at the leadership level, of course, and that's one of the things that we try to do when we do these reports is to ensure that this gets paid attention to at the right level.
How satisfied are you with the Homeland Security Department's response? You already mentioned that they said they would act upon some of your recommendations. They disagreed with some of your other findings.
Well, you know, no one likes to be audited, and I understand why that's the case. And, you know, these program managers certainly have a certain ownership of their program and a certain pride in what they do, and that's perfectly understandable. Our function is to be that outside agency within DHS, that professional skeptic that asks the hard questions and makes sure that we put them to their proofs. I'm reasonably satisfied, but obviously it's a constant challenge.
John Roth is the Inspector General at Homeland Security, and thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.